This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
This hour's top stories, senior UN human rights officials express deep concern about the lack of accountability for the killings of Palestinian children by Israeli forces. The Pentagon calls China the most pressing long-term strategic threat, saying U.S. warships will be more assertive in response to Beijing's actions. Also ahead, Iran says no separate document is necessary to revive the 2015 nuclear deal after the IAEA chief called for a new accord with Tehran. Our top story, UN human rights experts have expressed deep concern over the lack of accountability for the killing of Palestinian children by Israeli forces in recent years. According to the UN experts, civil society organizations have documented the deaths of 155 Palestinian children since 2013. Those children were killed by Israeli forces using live ammunition or crowd control weapons. The UN experts said only three indictments on criminal charges had been issued for offenses directly tied to those killings. They also refer to the killing of a Palestinian teenager in the occupied West Bank earlier this month. The UN experts call the murder a grave violation of international law and urged an independent investigation. The teenager was shot by an Israeli soldier during a protest against the settlement outpost. He later died of his wounds. Alfred de Zayas is joining us. He is a former independent expert with the UN Human Rights Council who joins us via Skype out of Geneva. Sir, it's good to have you with us on the show. I guess you know it would be best for you to share with us your understanding of this matter.
Well, my colleague, Professor Michael Link, and my colleague, Professor Agnes Calamar, these are the two rapporteurs that issued yesterday this media statement concerning the killing of children by Israeli forces in the occupied territories in West Bank. And had I still been rapporteur, I certainly would have joined them because they are absolutely correct in calling for an international investigation and a transparent investigation. Why that? Because there is a culture of impunity in Israel. Everybody knows on the 9th of July 2004, the International Court of Justice issued an advisory opinion with very precise recommendations to Israel, which have been totally ignored. There have been countless investigations carried out by the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, by rapporteurs John Dugard and Richard Goldstone and Richard Falk and Michael Link, and Israel has blithely ignored all of their findings and their pragmatic recommendations. Now, there is this culture of impunity and is going to remain. Under the presidency of Donald Trump, obviously Israel enjoyed complete, shall we say, protection from the United States, to the point that the United States has even imposed sanctions on the International Criminal Court that is currently seized of the matter. It is not only the rapporteurs that are calling on the world to take action against these crimes. There are any number of United Nations organs. Take the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. They are seized of the matter since 2018, and in December 2019, exactly a year ago, they declared that they had jurisdiction over the case. As I said, the International Criminal Court has been seized of the matter also. They are investigating the case. Israel has clearly stated it's not going to cooperate. So this is a matter of trying to impress upon world public opinion that you cannot put yourself above the law. Mm-hmm. This year, 2020, we're celebrating 75 years since the beginning of the Nuremberg trials. Now, the Nuremberg principles are applicable in the context of the occupied territories, and I think it is important that all professors of international law, myself, I'm a professor of international law here in Geneva, join hands in demanding accountability, demanding transparency in the investigations, and not just pro forma investigations.
Professor Desaias, of course, what you say about, I was just calculating the numbers in my head, and I came up to just picture it, 155 deaths in some, in after 2013, that will be 7 years and 155 children death. That is more than 20 cases a year and three cases of reporting, if I'm not mistaken, you know, according to what I read in my news piece. You know, don't you think that, you know, more could be done, or at least if it has been done by the UN experts, it has fallen on deaf ear. I wonder why. Does it really speak out about, the, you know, countries of the world not really taking what the UN reports necessarily seriously?
Unfortunately, most governments only give lip service to human rights and lip service to international law. We have a problem of selectivity. You can target some countries and defame them and weaponize human rights and say, this country is violating human rights, therefore we're going to impose sanctions on them. Other countries that commit more serious violations of international law enjoy total impunity. In this category, I can count certainly Saudi Arabia, I can count Turkey, I can count the United Arab Emirates. There are many countries that systematically violate international law and actually get away with it. The problem here is the problem of the credibility of the system. I think that the United Nations has done a tremendous job of standard setting. It has created mechanisms, but there is nothing by way of enforcement. We don't have a way of making the judgments of the International Court of Justice obeyed, or for that matter, making the findings of the Human Rights Committee or of the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination be implemented. We can call for it, but without a media that reports accurately and objectively and neutrally, we are not making much progress because the vast majority of the population in the world is simply victims of disinformation, victims of fake news. So they are simply, when they hear about these violations of human rights and international law by Israel, they say, oh, well, they're only defending themselves against terrorists. So once you have international media that systematically lies to the listeners, to the readers, etc., you cannot effectively push governments to action. That doesn't mean that we do not want the General Assembly to adopt resolutions condemning this kind of criminality. The Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights has a field office in Ramallah with a branch office in Gaza and also offices in East Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. They provide the information, but this information simply is met by media silence. There mm-hmm. is a high level of suppression of information.
Sure.
And you have to go yourself in the internet to try to get the facts. And as I said, the culture of impunity is something that affects the entire system.
Understandably, Professor, understandably. Just quickly running out of time.
Yes.
It was good to speak to you, though. Perhaps, you know, maybe if there are any other newer reports or reports of this kind, we'll be talking more about this. That was Professor Alfred Zayas, is a former independent expert of UN Human Rights Council, who we were lucky to have today from Geneva. Thank you very, very much, Professor. I talk to you later, hopefully. China has urged the United States to stop what it called the unjustified crackdown on Chinese companies. China says it'll continue to take necessary measures to ensure its companies' legitimate rights and interests. The reaction followed a Reuters report that Washington is poised to add dozens of Chinese companies to a trade blacklist. A report citing two people familiar with the matter said the companies include China's top chipmaker SMIC. News agency said companies that the U.S. accuses of having ties with the Chinese military are on the list as well. The administration of President Donald Trump has prepared a so-called entity list that hits key Chinese industries. The U.S. military says its warships will be more assertive in response to what it calls violations of international law. The Pentagon made the announcement in a document setting objectives for the U.S. Navy for the coming years. The document mentions several countries, particularly China and Russia. It accuses them of growing aggressiveness and contesting the balance of power in key regions. The document also describes China as the most pressing long-term strategic threat. The Pentagon says in response to that, that it will accept more calculated tactical risks. The U.S. and China are at odds over Beijing's territorial claim of all the islands in the South China Sea. Beijing accuses Washington of interfering in that region. Iran's permanent representative to the UN says his country is committed to bringing about peace, stability, and development in Afghanistan.
Iran and Afghanistan enjoy common religious, cultural, linguistic, and historical backgrounds, and our stability, social, cultural development, and economic growth are intertwined and mutually reinforced.
Takhtar Avanchi was speaking at a Security Council meeting on Afghanistan. He said the decades-long insecurity there can end only through a comprehensive and inclusive peace process. The Iranian envoy said Afghanistan's neighbors, as well as regional and international partners, should support the process too. Takhtar Avanchi called on Taliban militants to halt their attacks. In order for the peace process to go ahead, he also said the presence of foreign forces is one of the sources of instability in Afghanistan. An Afghan Taliban delegation led by its political chief visits Pakistan to discuss peace efforts. The visit comes as there is a 20-day break in the intra-Afghan dialogue, which has so far made little headway on the future of Afghanistan. Kamran Yusuf has more.
The Afghan Taliban delegation is in Pakistan to discuss the peace efforts. The delegation is headed by Mullah Brother, the head of Taliban's political office in Doha. The visit comes after Taliban and Afghan government took a 20-day break in their talks taking place in Doha. After months of negotiations, the two sides recently agreed on the rules of engagement. But there is no progress on the comprehensive ceasefire as Taliban have linked the truce with peace deal. But the Pakistan's foreign minister, who also met the Taliban leaders, said Taliban have shown their readiness to seek an end to the war.
Taliban is baat par qail ho chuke hain.
Taliban are convinced that the continuation of war is neither in their interest nor in the interest of Afghanistan. I get the feeling after my negotiations with the Taliban that they are serious to end this conflict, which is very encouraging.
Afghan Taliban and the U.S. signed a landmark deal in February this year. The deal outlines a roadmap for the U.S. troops' withdrawal from Afghanistan. In return, Taliban agreed not to allow Afghan soil to be used again by terrorist groups. Given Pakistan's historic ties with the Taliban, the U.S. and Afghan government expect Islamabad to ensure that the Taliban live up to their commitment.
Pakistan is in a position to use its lever, but it will not, I think. It will just facilitate. It will try, as Foreign Minister Qureshi has said in this event, that Pakistan will try to let the Afghan. There will be no imposition of any process on Afghan.
At the moment, all eyes are on the incoming U.S. president as to whether he will follow the same policy on Afghanistan or take a different course.
On paper, there seems no change in the policy of U.S. President-elect Joe Biden with regard to Afghanistan. But he may not hasten the troops withdrawal as sought by President Trump. This means the situation in Afghanistan will remain uncertain, at least in the foreseeable future. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
Let's move on to another story that happens to be out of a dash cam video that has been released showing a U.S. sheriff's deputy running over an unarmed black man in the state of Missouri. The incident took place in Kansas City on August the 15th. Victim has been identified as Lionel Womack, a former police detective who's 35 years old. He was on his way back home from a business trip when a highway patrol officer initiated a chase over an alleged traffic violation. Womack describes the encounter.
When the first officer turned his lights on, I pulled over and complied, exactly as you're supposed to. But when three additional vehicles pulled up quickly and started to surround my car, I freaked out. That's when I took off. It was a fight-or-flight moment, and I was going to live. I felt like I was in danger. This was out in the country late at night, and it was dark, so I ran for my life.
Womack says he was not speeding, nor was he under the influence of anything when he was initially pulled over. He says he sustained serious injuries. Womack has filed a lawsuit arguing that the officer used excessive force and was indifferent to his civil rights. Police have refused to fire the officer and did not explain why he did so. The incident comes as anger boils in the U.S. over police brutality against African Americans. The uproar intensified after the killing of George Floyd back in May. In other news, the U.S. Cybersecurity Agency is warned of, quote, grave risk to government and private networks after hackers accessed computer systems, dozens of organizations and federal agencies. Cybersecurity Agency says the hack has compromised federal agencies and critical infrastructure in a sophisticated attack. The Departments of Treasury, State, Defense, Energy, and Commerce are among those targeted. National Nuclear Security Administration has reportedly been hacked as well. President Donald Trump has made no official comment, but Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has blamed Russia. Moscow has denied involvement. U.S. President-elect Joe Biden has described the cybersecurity breach as a matter of great concern. He said his team would impose substantial costs on parties responsible for such attacks. Investigative journalist Max Perry believes there is no evidence that Russia has been behind the cyber attack in the U.S.
Well, you know, at the risk of sounding redundant, here we have yet another accusation coming from Washington pointed at Moscow of cyber espionage, but, of course, without the support of any evidence provided whatsoever. And, but, you know, this has been a recurring theme, but what is, I would say, is notably unique about this particular incident or separates it from previous instances where the Kremlin has been fingered for cyber breaches is that if you actually take a look at the cybersecurity assessment, not just the one by SolarWinds, but also by the firm FireEye, which has the U.S. government as one of its clients, their assessment given regarding this breach where malware was distributed throughout its network, its analysis does not itself identify any particular country or state actor.
Rebbe English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Rebbe English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Rebbe English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel. Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on November 3, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference on the occasion of the birthday anniversaries of the Holy Prophet of Islam and Imam Jafar al-Sadiq, greetings be upon them, and which coincides this year with the National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance and Unity Week.
The last point is about the war that is unfortunately ongoing in our vicinity between two of our neighboring countries, Azerbaijan and Armenia. This war is a bitter incident as it threatens the security of the region, and it is not good for our country either. It should come to an end as soon as possible. Of course, all lands belonging to Azerbaijan and occupied by Armenia should be freed and evacuated. All of them should be given back to Azerbaijan. This is one of the main conditions because those territories belong to Azerbaijan, and therefore, the Republic of Azerbaijan is entitled to liberate them, and they should be liberated. Of course, the safety of the Armenians living in those areas should be ensured, and international borders should be respected as well. The two sides should not transgress against other countries' borders.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever wanna need, my Lord. Protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith to be stronger.
In other words, international borders should be respected and terrorists should not be allowed to be located near our borders. According to certain reports, although some people deny it, there are reliable reports confirming this, a number of terrorists have become involved in this and that border. If they are located near the borders, and if we feel in danger, we will certainly confront them. They should not be allowed to come. I hope that all Muslim nations, all regional nations and all humans throughout the world will get rid of these maladies, God willing. I hope that by the blessedness of this great birthday anniversary of the Immaculate Souls of the Holy Prophet of Islam and Imam Sadiq, greetings be upon them, and of the pure soul of our magnanimous Imam, the dear Iranian nation will experience good days in the future. We are completely optimistic about this near future. Greetings be upon you, and Allah's mercy and blessings.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah.
internet trolls. The internet. What began as an exclusive tool to connect militaries, governments, and then universities has now, more than 60 years later, transformed everything about how modern societies operate and communicate. Today, no one can escape the grasp of social media or evade the mind-boggling connectivity that nearly all humans worldwide now have access to. But few have been prepared for what has also emerged with all this human connectedness. A new and ominous strain of human behavior has been unleashed. Increasingly, people are hiding behind a cloak of anonymity, waiting to provoke, harass, and even threaten anyone they choose. They are called internet trolls.
A troll is someone devoting large parts of their life to attacking other people on the internet, basically trying to make that other person's life miserable in some way.
They send things to my home. It terrifies me to think what they could do if they wanted to, knowing exactly where I live, knowing where my children go to school.
Trolls can be a minor annoyance or a life-crippling terror. But what happens if society tries to silence them? Who loses then?
Trolling is a free speech issue, and if you aren't free to hate someone, then you're not free.
I've been associated with all kinds of organized trolling groups. We're stretching the bounds of free speech. You either use it or you lose it. Feelings will be hurt.
Politicians and the courts are now grappling with who really is a dangerous troll.
I've been called trolled by very powerful people that should know better. Homophobe, misogynist, racist, all this stuff is just lazy people not wanting to interact.
Artist Gregory Allen Elliott is at the center of a landmark trolling case that might land him behind bars and forever change what any of us anywhere can or cannot say online.
If Mr. Elliott is convicted of a criminal offense, watch out. Nobody will be safe. You better shut up, because if you don't, you could be going to jail.
My name is Gina Crosley Corcoran. I write a blog called The Feminist Breeder, and I deal with a really steady onslaught of very vicious and dedicated trolls. Trolls can be really, really sneaky. When you think about patterns of stalking, stalkers don't just do it really quietly. They leave their victim clues that they're being stalked in order to scare them. So today I got a Working Person's Store magazine addressed to the Feminist Breeder with my home address. My trolls sent me this, probably to imply that I'm too lazy to find a real job besides blogging. So, guys, hey! Come here, pumpkin pie.
Gina's blog earns her family a decent income. She writes about being a stay-at-home mom, but from a pro-choice, modern feminist perspective. And a large, active community of like-minded women has grown around her blog.
I like to see that recognition response when someone else goes, oh, me too. And that's so validating. That's why I do it.
Feminists are frequently targeted by trolls. Gina knew to expect attacks, but she's been overwhelmed by the volume of abuse and stunned to discover who her trolls are.
The trolls and the really dangerous people that I attract are themselves mothers and have small children at home. They get something out of taking out their frustrations on someone like me. They see me as a figurehead, and they're really angry about the attention I'm getting from people, and they want to discredit me in any way they possibly can. These people spend all day taking screenshots of every word I type on the internet. They all pick it apart. They talk about my children. They talk about my clothes. They spend an incredible amount of energy focusing exclusively on something that they claim to completely hate. And to me, that's the difference between someone who just disagrees with you or someone who's really stalking every move you make. And those are the trolls.
Gina sees little difference between her trolls and a stalker. They want to see her react, and they know how to push her buttons.
A stalker wants to upset that person. They want to make them afraid. And that's what these trolls do. They leave comments in such a way that makes you feel afraid of what they're going to do and say. They'll leave comments about my address or my kids, and they do it because they want to get a reaction out of me. They want to see me lash out, and it all feeds into this sick and twisted entertainment value to them.
So what is it that motivates trolls? In London, England, psychologist Raj Persaud believes the internet has spawned an entirely new, yet unexplored, set of human behaviors.
Psychologists and psychiatrists have been somewhat taken back by the huge amount of negativity there appears to be on the internet. And it may be that the internet has unleashed a kind of dark demon within millions of people out there in the general public. We think that one of the things that's problematic about the internet is it normalizes extreme behavior. So because you see a lot of people on the internet behaving in an extreme fashion, you think it's more normal than it might actually be. And the other thing is it seems to encourage a herd-like piece of behavior. If one person starts being negative and a group of people pile in behind them, there's a kind of cascade effect, which you don't see in ordinary life outside of the internet.
Psychologists further believe that one thing has compounded the effects and numbers of trolls.
Anonymity seems to be a very important factor on the internet in that it seems to make people less inhibited about doing nasty things. It means that people feel free to get away with bad behavior because they think they're not going to get called to account. No one's going to point the finger at them. So the anonymity effect seems very important and may explain why so much dark and negative and extreme behavior occurs on the internet but doesn't seem to occur in real life, in face-to-face interaction.
But what inspires a troll? What do they get out of it? Operating out of an undisclosed location in North America, one hardcore and self-professed troll agreed to tell us, provided we maintained his anonymity.
I'm Wild Goose, and I'm a member of the Bill Wagoner crew. And I've done a podcast for the past several years documenting internet troll activity, hacker activity, Gamergate, Anonymous, Occupy, you name it. I've been a part of it. There's a serious darkness in not only us, but I think in everybody online. I think a lot of people just don't tap into the power of anonymity and what it can do for them. When you're anonymous, you're free to do and say a lot of things that you otherwise wouldn't do in real life. You would be powerless to do in real life.
Goose joined forces with like-minded trolls he met online, and they work as a team to offend and infuriate as many people as they can.
If you were to Google Bill Wagoner crew, chances are you'd come across a term called rip trolling. When somebody dies and their family puts up a memorial up in their honor, we might set up a separate page, or we might just go on that page and create a ruckus. But the idea is to get as many followers as possible on that page and make it seem as legit as possible so that we can offend as many people as possible when we start posting gore and other kinds of shocking material.
Hounding people when they are most vulnerable, like at the time of a loved one's funeral, is a surefire hit for the troll.
That's the easiest way for us to create a mass effect. It's really effective when you have all these people who are already emotional. They got this bomb on them, you know, with the gore photos, maybe some kind of sexually explicit photos. It sends their emotions into overdrive.
But what do the trolls get out of seeing these distraught reactions. Lulz. L-U-L-Z. That's the currency of the troll, and it's what they're after. Lulls are laughs, fun and amusement at the expense of others. The Wagoner crew will prod people online for reactions. The bigger their response, the more popular the target becomes.
Someone who gets really animated and waves their arms around on camera, preferably, or they'll scream into a microphone on a podcast, they might start crying, they become a lulz cow. They're like an ongoing target. We love that kind of reaction. We want to make them cry. We love to make them cry.
The open internet is a playground for goose and trolls like it. And the stark contrast to what they can get away with in normal society is not lost on them.
I really can't. I mean, the real world's so boring and it's lacking in lulls. It really is. I don't think we'd be able to find this in real life. The internet presented something that was never available to us before.
Today, if you go on the internet, you're entering the domain of the troll. But where did internet trolling all start? This unassuming computer science professor may hold the answer and may himself be one of the very first trolls on the internet.
I'm Dr. Adam Steele. I am an associate professor of computer science at DePaul University in Chicago. I think I'm the first recorded troll on the internet. Certainly not the first troll, but the first one that was actually written up. This is a piece that is here because my wife hates it, called The Alchemist. I didn't really notice, but it sure does look like a troll, and I guess he's stirring the pot.
Adam would first access the internet while attending university in the province of Quebec, Canada, and it wouldn't be long until he was stirring the pot with his wry sense of humor.
I was a grad student in 1993 at Concordia University in Montreal. Essentially, at that time, the internet was still very nascent, and at that point was just a relatively small number of universities that were connected together. And there was this kind of quasi-bulletin board system called the News Network. You had, for example, a group like Rec.Humor, and people would trade jokes, and I guess what happened at some point was that there were people on Rec.Humor who had a certain penchant for tasteless jokes that was not appreciated by the rest of the community. And so the tasteless denizens were kind of hived off and started their own group, and Alt.Tasteless was born.
As the chat group Alt.Tasteless got going, the jokes started to get more and more extreme. But soon, the jokes just couldn't get the rise they wanted.
I think it was a long, hot summer, and everybody was kind of getting a little bored. And there was this idea that the people of Alt.Tasteless should invade a news group, and somebody suggested Rec.Pets.Cats.
Yes, cat lovers would be the next target, and Adam would be the lead.
Like any community, they wanted to discuss problems that their cats had. So I guess my contribution was that we should actually engage them by writing a story that would appear to be from somebody who was genuinely concerned, get them to respond, a stealth attack. So I created a fictitious identity, and it was posted anonymously to Rec.Pets.Cats.
And what happened next would be recognized by Wired magazine as something that had never happened on the internet before.
I have two cats. Sootykin, 2-year-old female, and Chode. Chode's problem is that he has really stinky shits, paint peelers.
Adam's post was vulgar and over the top, but he took care to keep it believable.
Sooty goes into heat something fierce, yowling and presenting all the time. While dinner was cooking, I tried to stimulate her with a Q-tip because I had heard that one can induce ovulation that way. My day came into the bathroom while I was doing this, and needless to say, I don't think she bought my explanation.
The cat lovers, however, bought Adam's story, hook, line, and sinker.
The initial responses to the post were very helpful and essentially suggested that Sooty should get spayed. Then slowly, other suggestions started popping up.
As the off-color suggestions became grosser, and more extreme. The cat lovers were outraged, and the alt tasteless gang had a blast.
So what we did was we essentially trolled, you know, where you throw a lure out behind a boat and motor slowly over the fish until somebody bites.
Adam and the alt.tasteless crew had become the internet's first gang of trolls. Back then, Adam was one of about 14 million internet users worldwide. 25 years later, there are 3 billion people online, and the nature of trolling has evolved.
What's happened now is that trolling has taken on a meaning different from the sort of phishing metaphor and more towards that of the troll under the bridge, where someone will post something and the responses will be very destructive, basically laying waste to whatever's been said.
In the early 1990s, Adam and his friends were trolling for fun. But now, negativity is everywhere on the internet. Back in London, Dr. Raj Persaud suspects that we all have a potential troll lurking in our psyches.
The answer to the question of whether we're all potential trolls is delivered by a simple question. Have you ever gossiped negatively about someone else? Because if you have, it is a sense in which you're doing a kind of micro-trolling behavior.
It's not pretty, but science has now proven that putting someone else down can make us feel better about ourselves. And there's a specific name for the feeling that results.
Psychologists are taking increasing interest in what's called the Schadenfreude effect. And Schadenfreude is a word from German, which is about feeling pleasure at someone else's downfall. There are a lot of people on the planet feeling low self-esteem, feeling beaten up by life. Maybe watching other people do badly, watching other people suffer, seems to correct your low self-esteem.
Deriving pleasure from the pain of others is a characteristic we all seem to have to a degree. But psychologists are now finding that hardcore trolls are likely to express 4 dark personality traits. In Winnipeg, Canada, a landmark study of internet trolls has now shown that one of those dark traits stands above the rest. Sadism.
Sadists do it because they like it. Some people get their jollies by being rude and obnoxious and causing harm to other people, sometimes serious harm to other people, and it gives them pleasure.
Dr. Paul Trapnell and his colleagues have confirmed that the internet, with millions of potential victims and anonymity to hide behind, is a playground for people with sadistic tendencies.
It's a venue where a person can go on and ruffle somebody's feathers or embarrass or humiliate them or make them feel anguish, and there is no consequence to that, and it's easy to do. So that might attract people that take pleasure in harming people, and that seems to be what we found.
Trapnell and his team began their studies by focusing on people who frequently leave comments on message boards. A significant number of them unabashedly rated trolling as their favorite commenting activity.
Then we asked them to also fill out a number of personality questionnaires, and those questionnaires included some measures of well-known, widely studied forms of nasty tendencies. We found, as expected, that the trollers were higher on all of the malevolent traits. It's not a stretch, but nobody had investigated that with data. And so we did so, and then sure enough, that's true. Let me illustrate what I mean by these 4 dark tendencies that have specially toxic social consequences. Psychopathy, we can be callously indifferent by our reckless pursuit of things that we want. In narcissism, we are callously indifferent to others by our pursuit of grandiosity and wanting to hog the limelight, wanting to think that we are superior to other people. Machiavellianism, the pursuit of strategic harm in order to benefit ourselves. Sadism is a particularly malevolent way that we can do harm to others, and that is by seeking to harm people purposely because it's pleasurable to us. So all of us have the potential to be dark in these four different ways. And indeed, some people combine these tendencies in ways that make them especially dark, malevolent individuals. And that is a very, very malevolent person. This is not somebody that you want to have anything to do with at all. Definitely not.
Nasty individuals have had free rein on the internet, and trolling is on the rise. But more and more people are starting to fight back. This accused troll has been forced off the internet for 3 years by a Toronto court. And today, his artwork has been forced off these cafe walls by angry protests. Gregory Allen Elliott is in limbo, awaiting verdict in a landmark Twitter harassment trial.
When I use Twitter, I use it as pure form. As an artist, I just went, this is a brush, this is some paint, this is a canvas. I used it to comment on politics. I used it to help people. So I just used it every way possible. One day I responded to every tweet that came across my tweet stream. And then someone said, you don't have to respond to everything. And I said, I know, right? But today that's what I'm doing as an artist and an experimenter.
At one point, Gregory was sending 300 tweets per day. He was acerbic, sometimes crude, and very opinionated. Inevitably, he made some enemies who wanted to shut him up.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you for joining us on brand new episodes of Back to Reality. Only on IRIB English Radio. I am your humble host, Zainab. Thank you so very much for joining us this evening or morning or afternoon, wherever it is that you are and whatever time it is that this is airing for you. In the studio with me, I have two special guests, my brothers in faith and humanity. Brother Muzaffar, salam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Sisla. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us. And Brother Wahid.
Salam alaikum.
Wa alaikum wa rahmatullah. And you might want to remove that mask because your voice is incredibly muffled.
Really? Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you for being with us. So, guys, today's episode, we're going to be talking about something that really hit me in the feels. I read it and I was like, this is something I definitely want to talk to. Okay, let me just hit you with this sentence, right? Pain is certain, suffering is optional.
Whoa.
What does that mean?
Let that sink in.
What does that mean? Can you give us some examples? Give us some examples for the listeners too.
Yeah, like if somebody punches you in the face, the pain is certain, but the suffering, you don't have to suffer.
You don't have to suffer. Just because pain, I feel...
Give me examples.
Yeah, that wasn't a good example, was it?
I think our listeners need examples for this one.
Suffering is a choice that I make. It's a reaction, okay, that I have toward any occurrence in my life. Pain is certain. Some things are going to hurt real bad, like a punch in the face, getting my tooth pulled out, somebody being mean to you.
Suffer? Are they not together simultaneously?
No. That's on you. Right. Whether you want to take that pain, if you look at it as a process of growth, if you look at it as something that is good for you, I got that tooth pulled out because had I not done that, it would have rot and it would have, you know, the rest of my teeth would have rot and this and that. When I look at it like that, the suffering goes away. I'm like,
but you're in pain.
Yeah,
you might
the pain
be in
is
pain
certain.
For the coming week.
She's talking about suffering as a kind of mentality.
Yeah,
it's, like
the, it's the place you are up here in
yeah.
your brain.
Let's think of it as opposite of thankfulness. The kind
suffering,
of suffering
yeah.
would be like you just got some pain, and then instead of
let's give some practical examples in the society. Like someone comes up and is very rude towards you.
Yeah.
You feel this pain.
So
you want to give
would,
back. What
right.
do you do? No.
Suffering would be
situation.
Like going, oh, they did something bad to me.
And dwelling in
dwelling
it.
On
right.
it, and you're letting
feeling
it,
bad.
Yeah, feeling bad, and just being like, and then the next
negativity.
Person you, yeah, the next person you meet, you're just like, you know what happened? Somebody was mean to me.
And project that.
And you have this
person.
Grudge,
yeah.
this
right.
grudge within you for months.
Suffering.
So, you decide not to have that grudge within you.
Right.
At that moment, you just cut that grudge.
Yeah.
Out.
So
yeah.
they hurt you, and then what are you gonna do? You're gonna be like.
You just leave it there.
Good. I got hurt today. Oh, yeah.
No.
I'm growing.
So yeah. when we say it's optional, we just leave it there.
Huh?
Is that right, Shay?
Let it go.
Just let it go.
I'm
at
just
that
discussing
moment.
This, man. Don't.
I think that's exactly what it is, bro.
Right.
Because it was beautifully put by the little charade you guys played out there. Something happens to you, and the way I analyze it and decide to react to it. That person hurt me. They said something really hurtful to me. I can either say, yes, the pain was there. You recall a failure, right? Last year, sometime around here, I failed miserably at a project, right? I can constantly look back at that project and feel a sense of failure hurts. I never fail. I'm Zainab, supposedly. Not to pat myself on the back, but pat. But I tell myself that I could think about, I was so embarrassed. It was so horrible. All that time and energy wasted. What if they don't hire me again? Or I can say, I learned something from this. It was a great experience.
Right.
I exhausted all the
right.
options, but it didn't work out.
I would
out.
Use this experience for the future.
There we go. So
there
how many
light
times
at the
have
end
you
of the
experienced
tunnel.
Something like that?
A lot.
Tell me about times that you felt you don't need to suffer from a pain.
I don't need to suffer from a pain?
Yeah.
I'm
going to move out of the suffering space and grow.
Ooh.
Make it turn into something
now,
positive.
Now
okay, recording. Tell me.
Yeah. So basically a person came up once and was very rude and, you know, said many things. It happens in different situations, you know. And I just decided not to answer back, but with a smile.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, you do not talk about that incident. If you want to talk about it with your close ones and your relatives, your friends, you just hurt them too.
Mm.
All right. If you need to release yourself, all right, you talk about it once, thoroughly, and then you leave it at that moment, as we talked about with Sheikh. You leave it at that moment, at that incident, and then that's it. You don't talk about it anymore, all right? And you just let it go. You concentrate on the now, the power of now. That's the technique I use, basically. You talk about it thoroughly, and then you let it go.
Yeah,
you start with a new chapter of your life. When you continue to talk about that incident over and over again with your close ones, with yourself, your mind,
right.
That is just negativity.
Mm. Yeah.
That is toxic for you. That's venomous. All right?
Stop playing it back in your head.
Just injecting that venom in your body. And that mind activity that you have, that just takes away all your energy. You feel tired and you haven't done anything.
Anything. That is so true.
Off the back of that, that's a very good piece of advice, actually, to talk about it thoroughly once.
Once and for all.
Your mind needs to process it and need
closure.
To kind of
I think
complain
you need
to somebody.
Too.
Some people need to complain to their spouse or their friends or whoever, right? But, you know, you can actually do it to Allah as well. The point is you actually get it out of your system. People think that they're strong enough to keep it inside. You're not.
You need an outlet. You need to vent. The human heart is so fragile. As strong as it is, it's so fragile and it's so delicate that you can't constantly burden it with these things.
Now, I have the technique, if you could call it a technique, to talk with that person directly. I prefer not to talk with close ones or family members. Why? Because they are just making them upset.
Yes,
I'm just making them sad. So you talk with that person, you release yourself, talk thoroughly, and then that's it. It's over with.
What did I want to tell
you? But then you have people who have that grudge within themselves. Years. They just have that grudge, you know, haven't released it. And they have talked about it over and over again. Does it sound familiar?
Mm.
So we need to get rid of that kind of, when you talk about it all the time.
Repetitive. Negative energy?
That negative energy, yeah.
Brother Mudafa, can you think of any other solutions for this scenario?
Yes, sister. I call it the SpongeBob SquarePants solution, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to be an idiot.
Yes.
Sometimes the problem is you're too clever and you know that you've just been attacked.
Mm.
You know that this person has just made a snide remark towards you. You know that this person is doing something intentionally to try to make themselves look better than you in front of others, or, you know, loads of different scenarios. You've got to be SpongeBob SquarePants.
He's facing Squidward.
SpongeBob SquarePants, exactly. Squidward.
When he's facing Squidward.
Squidward is always rude and nasty and mean to SpongeBob. What does SpongeBob do? He's oblivious. He doesn't even know. And so what happens is the best things always end up happening.
You're ignoring, basically.
When you say
ignore that person's
comments, isn't the right word, because ignoring is something that your parents tell you when you're being bullied in school or something, and then you're like, you can't ignore it. It's right in front of your face. I'm not even saying to ignore it. I'm saying to accept it.
Make the best out of it.
Accept it, but pretend that you didn't realize it. So, yeah, I mean,
accept
it is kind of ignoring it.
Yeah, it is. Accept it. Recognize it.
Right.
And then
pretend
let it go.
Pretend it's not what it is.
Could I explain it in this way? Accept it. Recognize it, embrace it, and then let it go.
Look, often these things happen with your Muslim brethren, right?
Absolutely.
What does Islam tell you to do when it comes to your Muslim brethren? That you need to be merciful amongst them, and you need to give them loads and loads of benefits of the doubt. Mm. So many benefits. I'm literally saying don't even ignore it. Just be an idiot.
Right. You know
just
someone blatantly insulted you, but you go like, oh, that was so funny the way he was so sarcastic. Right.
I don't agree with you.
In some certain situations, it really does help.
I wouldn't laugh or smile like that, or I wouldn't pretend to be an idiot. I would go with that strategy to recognize it.
Mm.
That was a comment to me. Recognize it, embrace it, and let it go. Or talk with that person.
Sometimes when you are in a discussion with someone and they constantly make snide comments at you, doing that to them,